Robert Draper has been a national correspondent for GQ magazine for the past decade. Last year, his biography on President Bush, called Dead Certain, was published. His account, based on access to every important figure in his administration, attempts to be the essential biography of the Bush years. WMNF spoke with Robert Draper and asked him about the nearly unprecedented access he himself got with the president.
I'd gotten 6 one-hour interviews with the president, and he'd not given that kind of access to anybody before. It wasn't an overnight proposition getting this by any means. I'd known Bush when he was governor, and I was at Texas Monthly back in the 90s. And in 1998, I did a very lengthy profile of him when I joined GQ and when he was beginning to run for president. I spent a lot of time with Bush and with his family and with his political cohorts then. But still, when I decided to do this book at the end of 2004, the White House was not terribly receptive just because they tend to be press-averse. And so it took a couple of years of me sort of doing the unglamorous legwork that journalists have to do and interviewing everybody I could within and outside of the White House before Bush finally agreed to let me come in for an off-the-record chat in the summer of 2006 just to get a sense of what I was up to. And he reflected on our meeting for a few months, mulled over the options, and ultimately in December of 2006 decided to let me do one interview to see how that would go. And at the end of it, he said, okay, we'll do another, and ultimately that resulted in 6 interviews.
You don't go for too much psychoanalyzing in this book with the president. Many others, of course, have, just observing our president the last 7 years. I did find it interesting, and I know people have speculated on this whole thing, his relationship with his father, that there's a passage in your book where he talks about how he knows much more than his father, the former president, in terms of, obviously, daily intelligence briefs and the like. And obviously, the president, our current president should be getting more information than anybody else in the world. But yet he seemed to be saying this to you, or you quote him as saying it like he's always boasting about this. That seemed kind of disturbing in a way.
Well, I think you're right that though I try to avoid psychoanalyzing in the book, in the case of his relationship with his father, it's unavoidable. It's too tempting because here we are, two presidents virtually back-to-back, and George W. Bush growing up as the eldest son of a famous father had something of a cross to bear, and something I think that remains to some degree unresolved in him, and witness that passage that you remarked on. The context for that passage was me asking him, is it really true, as you said to Bob Woodward, that you did not consult with your father, you didn't ask for his advice before you invaded the very country that your father had invaded a dozen years before? And Bush said, no, that's absolutely right. I didn't talk to him about it at all. That's not the kind of relationship I have with my dad, where I ask him, gee, what would you do if you were me? And I found that that's remarkable, that his father had intimate experience with dealing with Saddam Hussein and with invading Iraq, and that George W. Bush would not make use of that resource. But I think that speaks very much to the tensions that remain in what is otherwise a loving relationship between father and son.
We're speaking with Robert Draper. He's the author of the book Dead Certain, now out in paperback, a biography on President Bush. Your title, Dead Certain, obviously reflects Bush's attitude. He doesn't seem to be uncertain, or is, in his words from a few years ago, he doesn't do nuance. Are there occasions that you have observed at all in your book where he actually did change his mind from an advisor giving him some advice?
Well, what he will, yes, in the margins is the answer to that question, but not on fundamental things. I mean, he said to me in our very first interview, look, there's no need to argue, for example, about the freedom agenda. It goes without saying, in Bush's view, that promoting freedom across the world is a good thing. But as Colin Powell had come to believe, it had real limits in diplomacy. As Condoleezza Rice is now recognizing, a Secretary of State, simply telling countries like Egypt, we demand freedom, is not going to make freedom happen. And so the president at times will give a press conference when he doesn't want to, will amend a speech, will take a look at for example, his tax cuts that he insisted upon them being a certain level of you know, $1.8 trillion or whatever, and ultimately came down to $1.3. In those kinds of margins, he's willing to negotiate. But on the very fundamentally held beliefs that he has, he remains pretty resistant to reconsidering.
Your book begins during the campaign against John McCain back in 1999 and 2000 and goes up until the end of 2006. Interesting, Robert Draper, certainly is after the re-election of Bush in 2004, his presidency, which of course was already Iraq War had already been going for a couple of years, but he was able to eke out a victory over John Kerry. But in 2005, things went really south, and his presidency seems to have never recovered. I'm talking about the reaction to Hurricane Katrina, and then the follow-up, the selection of initially of Harriet Myers as Supreme Court Justice. Talking about Katrina, you write about this in your book, certainly, but tell our listeners, why did the president react immediately the way that everybody feels he should have when that disaster happened?
I think that goes to a couple of things. I mean, one is that dispositionally, Bush was always, including when he was governor, disinclined to interpose himself in the personal tragedy. He just thought, and this is kind of a Bush thing, and I think is virtuous up to a point, that it's unseemly to do so, that it looks like grandstanding. So there's that piece. When you consider where Bush's head was during this time, in August of 2005, he'd suffered a few political defeats, most notably Social Security, but still had a lot of swagger to him, still believed that that things were going his way. And I think as well there is a problem that runs throughout George W. Bush's political career of his being lackadaisical at times and reacting slowly to events until the whiff of crisis is actually in his nostrils. That may have served him well in the South Carolina primary in February of 2000 when he clocked John McCain after getting drubbed a month earlier in New Hampshire. But it probably did not serve the American public well that he moved as slowly as he did. And once he did employ, in Katrina that is, and once he did employ the language of a guy who was in a hurry to talk about all the progress that was going to be made, all the good things that would be done in New Orleans, rather than to acknowledge publicly the disaster that everybody had been witnessing on their television screens, in which he came to the game rather late in acknowledging.